Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to episode 124 of Blue Jays Happy Hour. I'm Nick Ashbourne, joined as always by Andrew Stoughton. And we are recording for the first time when the Blue Jays are above 500 in 2024, I believe. Coming off a pretty significant win over the New York Yankees, maybe not the most glamorous win, definitely not the most glamorous win, but a big development for the Blue Jays since we last spoke, Stoughton, is how Chris Bassitt has looked. And he can be a challenging pitcher to evaluate at times and to track what he's doing and whether stuff is where it needs to be or not, but he seems to be back on track. We've got two strong starts in a row. He had a significant amount of juice in his last outing against the Yankees compared to some other of his starts this season. All of a sudden, you've got a Blue Jays rotation that has Berríos rolling, Bassitt seemingly rolling, Kikuchi doing well, and a little bit of potential with Yariel Rodriguez as well. We can start with Bassitt, but how does the prognosis on this rotation look at the moment?
Yeah, I think it's pretty good, right? We talked about Bassitt last week, you know, when we were talking about how concerned we are about the Jays' various starters. And, you know, he is the guy, and I think I said at the time that you know, the margins are a little bit finer. He doesn't throw as hard as some of the other guys, but also he is a dependable old warhorse, right? And he's a guy who obviously has a huge arsenal, and can kind of pull out any pitch he needs in any count. And I think that, you know, I wouldn't say it's inevitable that he was going to get better. I mean, I think he probably, maybe the, considering how bad some of his early starts have been, but it's not entirely surprising, but definitely nice to see something that has been needed, because, you know, as much as everybody wants to talk about the offense, the pitching did not really hold up its end of the bargain in the first, you know, 2-3 weeks of the season or whatever, however long it's been. So that is that's definitely a good development, and I think he's a guy who, you know, we saw last year when he was really, you know, fell flat in the St. Louis series, just came out of the gate really not looking good, and then got it together and really got stronger as the year went on. So hopefully there's a repeat of that in store. But yeah, you have to feel confident about him, feel confident about just about everybody at this point.
Yeah, I thought Bassitt's start on Monday was particularly impressive. Like, he did the thing he does, where he threw 8 different pitches at least 4 times. I believe it is 5 of those pitches were at least 1 mile per hour harder than his earlier season average. So that's the kind of stuff you want to see from him, even if he's not, you know, quote unquote, a stuff guy, still within the realm of what he is. You want to see that stuff. Watching the game, it's just kind of a reminder that you can't always treat him like you do all the other pitchers. Like, sometimes he'll miss right over the plate and a guy will hit it weakly because he's clearly looking for something totally different. And so in another situation, I might say, oh, he's hanging that over the plate and he's going to get pounded next time. But with him, I'm not sure he is going to get pounded next time, because it's just, if he's able to keep deceiving people, that is the type of outcome that will come to pass. And I think that because he's got this dizzying arsenal, he is able to keep deceiving people. So when that velocity is, 93 miles per hour, and then people have to worry about, you know, cutters and curveballs, sliders, sweeper, splitter, changeup, that is it's a tough assignment. And he's had all the success against the Yankees in the past with the Blue Jays. I'm not sure that that's gonna hold up necessarily, but it is definitely a big step forward for him to be someone they feel like they can trust, which I don't know if he ever kind of fell out of that realm, but you know, I could see him still posting an ERA around 4 this year or something like that, especially if Rogers Center is a little bit more hitter friendly. But he's still, as you say, he's the reliable warhorse. And I thought it was interesting when he went off on some of the pitching injury stuff early this season. He had some interesting insights. I believe it was a Shai Davidi story. And he said it was it made him sick watching the finger pointing that's going on, and that the players are to blame to some extent because they're trying to chase velocity, but also the pitch clock is to blame and training. And it's this complicated issue that is being kind of boiled down to being a simple thing, and people are blaming sweepers and stuff like that. I find it to be an interesting conversation, but at the same time, I forget who it was. It might have been Clayton Kershaw said this week that, like, if anyone had figured this out, they would be unbelievably wealthy at this point. So he's pretty skeptical of the idea that anyone knows what they're talking about with pitcher injuries. Do you feel like there's something different going on with that this year, or is it maybe something that's a bit of a fluke or something that was just the higher profile guys are getting hurt?
I do think it's kind of the higher profile guys. And I mean, I think if you look back, the injuries like this happen a lot. And I don't know that you can put much into like the frequency pattern, you know, kind of, there are years where it's higher, there are years when it's lower. And I don't know that you can look at it going back, you know, the few graphics I've seen showing injuries and Tommy John surgeries, you know, in April or whatever it may be. I don't know that there's that much of a pattern to it, even except that it's, you know, as the surgery gets more common and more, well understood, and is something that teams can and players can recover from, and just gets done better than it did, you know, when it was more of a scary thing and a radical thing sort of in the older days, the more common it becomes. And, you know, I think that, the chase for velocity is just not going to stop, because that's how you become successful. That's what successful pitching is, right? I mean, that's never going to go away, I don't think. You know, nobody's going to trade lower velocity for potential greater health, because you need that velocity just to get in the door in the first place. I mean, it's such a rarefied position to even get on a big league roster, let alone get to be making starts, et cetera, et cetera. So, I understand why he's saying that about the pitch clock. I forget who it was, but I saw somebody who said that the pitch clock was basically, a response too late to the way that, you know, pitching development has sort of taken place and has had sort of rung the control of the game and changed the game in ways that, you know, nobody ever asked for, basically. You know, guys just needing more time between pitches and really slowing things down. And obviously, you know, the pitching changes and that will slow the game down as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think that probably there is something to the fact that, you know, guys having to go max effort with a shorter time between pitches probably is, you know, causing some injuries. I don't think Bassett's wrong there. But also, I think the pitch clock has been a great success, and that, you know, a lot of guys were, you know, it's a shame to say, but the pitchers are there to get injured. You know, that's going to happen. I think whether there was a pitch clock or not, I don't think the implementation of the pitch clock necessarily is creating injuries. It's just maybe having them show up a little sooner than they would have inevitably anyway. So, I don't know if there is a solution to it, because the chase for velocity is just so lucrative, right? I mean, there are few guys who can look at this and say, well, I'll sit 93 instead of 95, 96, 97 and take my chances. Like, that's just not smart business if your career is Major League Baseball pitcher.
Yeah, and I think you make a good point about people breaking into the league, right? Like, when you are Chris Bassett and you have this track record, maybe you do have the luxury of taking a little bit off, or being like, I'm not feeling maybe 100% in this individual start, and I'm going to go a little bit less max effort. I mean, I know on the broadcast, he talked about how that was one thing he liked about the Blue Jays rotation, is that it was full of guys who don't necessarily sell out for velocity, although I'm not sure what Kikuchi is doing. If he has another gear, yeah. I would kind of be interested in seeing it. But with, you know, Barrios, that's not necessarily his thing. And Kevin Gausman has been variable on his velocity, although, you know, him having more like 95 is definitely helpful. And it is notable that the Blue Jays have targeted these durable guys, like these guys with a track record of making 30, 32 starts in a season. Like, that's why they gave Barrios that money. You know, Bassett, I know he had Tommy John earlier in his career, but more recently he's been a really durable guy. Kevin Gausman, I know we're talking about his shoulder nowadays, but he's been a durable player as well. And so that is something that clearly appeals to this franchise. And so I don't know if the Blue Jays are on like the cutting edge of we're going to preserve guys' health or anything like that. I think they're thinking about durability from the standpoint of a competitive advantage. They're not thinking about we care about these individuals as human beings and we want them to have greater health. They just want them to be on the field. It does seem like the Blue Jays are interested in that. But then if we went to their draft room, I'm sure every pitcher they're coming up talking about when are they going to draft this guy, the number of their fastball velocity comes up very early in that conversation. It's not like the Blue Jays are going out and drafting a bunch of guys who throw 89 because they're confident they can be durable fifth starters. You know, the Blue Jays went after Nate Pearson. And, you know, he looks great lately out of the bullpen, but, you know, a big part of his story has been him having this huge velocity and him being unable to stay healthy. So it's something that veterans kind of get to do and probably, you know, arguably should do more to preserve themselves, but it's difficult. It's difficult to go into a battle and be like, I'm not going to bring my best weapon to this. Like it's a tricky thing to do. You have to have a lot of confidence in your ability to do other things. And moving on in the rotation, one guy who did seem to, I don't know, selling out for velocity maybe is a bit of a stretch, but brought a little bit more velocity perhaps than we anticipated was Yariel Rodriguez in his MLB debut. We saw a guy coming out pumping 95, 96, and this was in a shortened outing, to be fair. But what was your first impression of what he was able to do and where that kind of puts him as a potential fifth starter going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's the fifth starter. I mean, that's maybe taking too big of a step after watching him go through a Rockies lineup that's, you know, not exactly world-beating, though they kind of looked like it on Friday night. But I mean, yeah, the velocity, like you say, it was a short start, but the velocity was definitely better than what the reports on him had said. You know, the arsenal looked like a deep starter's arsenal. I liked the funky delivery and changing the arm angle. Like the post that I did the other day, you know, StatCast picks up the release point and like they're definitely two different, like very different clusters of sliders with a gap in between. Like it's not like his arm was sliding down. It's like there's one that was a little more over the top and one that kind of is coming in from the side. I think that he did that with his fastball as well. And we saw the hesitations and that's, you know, that's funky, fun stuff. And I think like we were talking about with Bassett, stuff that kind of can keep hitters on their toes. And you know, with the velocity there, with the ability to throw strikes, I mean, yeah, he looks like, as long as the innings don't become an issue, and I think it's different, right? I mean, yes, he didn't pitch last year at all. And obviously there will be some component of like the innings management, also because he was a reliever in Japan before that, but this isn't Tiedemann, who's like 21, who's never in his life worked a starter's workload. Like Rodriguez in Cuba. And I think in his early days in Japan as well, even though those are shorter seasons, did work, you know, every sixth day or whatever it is, and did put, you know, put in a lot more innings, and in terms of like building up his arm, than a real young guy has, because he's in, you know, mid 20s and he's been around for a long time, doing the thing. So I don't think it's the same, you know, innings management kind of situation as Tiedemann, but there's going to be obviously some watching of that. But yeah, for me, I mean, you know, it looked great. It looked like it certainly should be, you know, fifth starter. It feels like a floor almost.
From a talent standpoint, like most of the guys people are rolling out in that fifth starter role are players who are significantly less upside than Rodriguez. Guys who don't throw as hard, don't have the slider. So in terms of what he could be a massive asset in that role in terms of the depth in the rotation. Like you said, the innings are a concern. Like his highest inning total at the professional level is 133.1. So he has done somewhat of a full season as a starter, but that's something he's touched once. He's never been outside of 100 innings beyond that in the 90s relatively consistently. So that will be intriguing. Like he might be, I don't know if Francis is going to be the guy because Francis could easily get sent down, but he might be sort of quasi paired with someone. Like if he's more of a four to, you know, six if he's absolutely rolling, but maybe never farther than that five inning guy. And we'll see how that plays out over the course of the season. He feels like, you know, probably good value on what they signed him to. I'd like to see, as you said, the Rockies lineup away from Coors Field is pretty bad. I'd like to see him face real competition. Like, he did hang the slider a lot. He didn't throw a lot of any of the splitter, sinker, curveball. So a team that had kind of elite left-handed hitters, that would be interesting to see what he'd be able to do against them. But like, it's when I saw him pitch this game, I thought, man, this guy could be a hell of a late inning reliever. Like, it kind of yeah, made me feel like more confident that the Blue Jays were going to get their value out of this contract one way or another. Whether it works in this starting role, I think, you know, that remains to be seen. Fun fact also about Yariel Rodriguez is that on Baseball Reference, he's listed 165 pounds, which I think might just be slightly out of date. But that's a good thing, you know? Like, he's a, you know, he seems to be sort of a big, strong, solid. Again, like, you never know if that translates into durable, but I feel better about him, sort of the way he looks and the way he carries himself, than I would if I felt like he was this tiny, slight guy. I don't know. I think you're definitely way more positive than negative coming out of this MLB debut. I also believe that it is going to be quite easy for people to set the bar too high, because this was sort of an, you know, relatively unimpeachable outing within the context of what he might have done. And the reality is, we need to see a little bit more in terms of the lefties, a little bit more in terms of the command, and a little bit more in terms of the facing real major league hitters.
Yeah, you're definitely right about the lefties thing. I think partly, and I mean, I'm guilty as charged about maybe setting the bar too high. And yeah, the reliever thing, absolutely. I think that, you know, the contract is going to work out either way. I think that you do feel good that way, as you said. It's just, man, like, it certainly impresses me more than Bowden Francis did, which is, you know, odd, seeing as Chris Bassett was calling him, you know, a potential, you know, number one at some point there.
Bowden Francis hype train was bizarre. Like, I never really got it. Like, I thought at the very best he could get by as a fifth starter, and that would be like a very good outcome. And here we are, you know, we're not there anymore, but here we were not long ago, where people were talking about, like you said, him being sort of a, maybe even a middle of the rotation starter type guy. And I don't know, like, he could be a viable reliever, but it seems like we're not going to go deep into the roster stuff today, because that could very easily happen shortly after we record, but
true.
He's a pretty easy guy to send down.
Oh yeah, I think that's, you know, not to do with the thing you just said, but yeah, no, I think that's true. And yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a good reminder, and it's a thing that everybody does every year. It's like, oh, don't look at spring stats, you know, be cognizant of, you know, what the matchups are and what spring is, and don't get too excited. Don't be putting too much hype together for anybody coming out of spring. And then you kind of end up having to do it anyway, because there's no other data to go upon. Right. And we're here, we're in the middle of talking about it. We've been talking about it for weeks now, and thinking about the team. And so you can't help but overreact to small samples that are ultimately going to be meaningless. I mean, Dalton Varsho increased his OPS by nearly 200 points in those two games against Colorado. Like, we're still in such an early part of the season that it's absurd to get worked up. And that's the season stuff. And then the spring stuff is even more meaningless. And yet, how could you not look at what Francis did in the spring and think, okay, maybe there is something here. You know, he does throw harder than before. There are some, you know, there is a bit of an arsenal there. It's not a great one. And it felt like it was coming together. And he still might, you know, I think he's probably going to go down to Buffalo and be that depth guy, which will, you know, inevitably be needed, unless it's, you know, last year's roster or the 2016 Blue Jays rotation. And we might see him again. That's fine. But then you see Wes Parsons get like offloaded for international bonus pool money, and you're kind of like, okay, right. Little reality check there on what these guys really kind of are.
Yeah, I mean, Wes Parsons was an interesting case, because there was a lot of kind of advanced pitch level data being like, oh, this guy's actually got good stuff, watch out. And I know that he yeah, had, you know, he'd evolved his game a little bit overseas, and so that one cameo we saw from him in 2023 wasn't necessarily representative. But at the same time, sometimes it's just easier to kind of Occam's razor it a bit. Like, if this guy yeah. was a guy, chances are he would have been a guy by now. And we know that in baseball, pitchers can find new mechanics, a new pitch, and kind of become a fundamentally different guy in a way you can't necessarily do that in, you know, basketball or hockey or something like that. But at the same time, you know, if you're trying to believe in a Wes Parsons, if you're trying to believe in a Bowden Francis, like, you are, you know, you're believing uphill, if that metaphor makes any sense whatsoever. But, like, there are more factors going against you than going with you. Like, the one guy in that vein that I felt like was someone who might have more to give this season was Mitch White, and because of this big velocity boost, and then he came to the season and that just wasn't there anymore for some reason. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that one I don't necessarily feel as bad for getting on board that train, because I'm like, oh, if he's gonna have this stuff is compelling. Whereas when it's spring results, it's like, if he's gonna have these results will be good. As you point out, you know, it's a whole different ball game in terms of what hitters are working on and what hitters are even facing and all that jazz. And, you know, we may see Bowden Francis again, but also worth remembering that there's another guy down in Buffalo who probably thinks that he's at least the sixth starter on this team. Potentially more than that based on his quotes, but let's start with his performance. In Buffalo, we had an Alek Manoah start. He improved on what he did in Dunedin. He gave the Bisons 3.1 innings. You know, he struck out four and walked one, and said his priority was attacking the zone. So he accomplished that. On the flip side, you did get 8 hits and 4 runs, faced 19 hitters. A step forward would be fair to say, but a step forward kind of in the context of the previous outing being rough. How what is the vibe check on Manoah right now, to use the parlance of this podcast?
Well, my vibes, they've not been great on him for a little while. I mean, I guess that's not out of the ordinary. Yeah, I mean, yes, it was, like you say, in the context of where he's at and this particular progression. Yeah, I guess it was a step forward. But, you know, anybody on a rehab assignment has an outing where he only goes 3 1/3 and gives up 4 runs on 8 hits, and you're kind of like, all right, he's not ready. He's clearly not ready. Maybe needs to slow things down a bit. And I'm not saying that for Manoah yet, but you know, I think he's a guy who's going to have to, they're going to have to make a decision on him at some point, right? Probably. Like, I don't think he's going to be ready to come up when his, you know, the length of time for his rehab assignment is complete. So they'll probably have to option him, which, you know, he didn't take too very well last time, though I think it should go more smoothly this time. But I don't see, there's not a spot for him at this point. And with Rodriguez, you know, if he can come out and, like you said, look like he did against the Rockies, against like a real team, that's going to be tough for Manoah to claw his way back into the picture. I going past Bowden Francis, I think, shouldn't be that hard. And it is good to see him. You know, the velocity was not, it's still where it was last year, which is not what you really want, but not in,
it was good, you know, in Dunedin though.
Yeah.
And I think there was a little bit of a cold weather component maybe in Buffalo. So that aspect is maybe slightly more encouraging big picture, but not.
Yeah,
thrilling.
And I think it was like 62% strikes, which is good. I think that was well up from like 40% or something like that the previous start, which, you know, yeah, he's gonna have to throw strikes if he's going to be able to get big leaguers out. So the lack of walks is good. The 4 strikeouts is good. You know, I think he can be a really good AAA pitcher if he works on it.
I'm gonna read a couple of quotes from Manoah. Sportsnet sent David Singh down to Buffalo to cover the start, which was good, so that we got a little bit of Manoah's insight. So based on the start itself, he said, it's just continue to attack. I can't control results. I can't control balls in the infield. I can't control weather. I can't control any of that. I can't control once the ball leaves my hand. I can make the best possible hit pitch and they can hit it 400 feet. What am I supposed to do? So my job is to go out there and attack. Today I was attacking and I feel like I was throwing the ball pretty well. It's interesting because from a 30,000 foot perspective, that is a good way for pitchers to think about their game, I think, because there are a lot of things that are outside of their control, and to be able to mentally kind of get over those hurdles by acknowledging that they just have to center themselves and do what is within their control sounds positive, but at the same time, coming from a guy who just got knocked around a little bit in AAA, it sounds odd, and it sounds strange in contrast to what we hear from Manoah in the past, right? Like, we think of Manoah as being this very brash, confident pitcher, and for him to kind of fall back into the kind of baseball nihilism bracket feels out of character.
It does. It does. And those are just the kind of, those are the quotes of a guy who got knocked around a bit, right? Like, it's, that's, you don't say those things if you have a better pitching line on the day. Those are the things you have to say to try to put a positive spin on what was, like, just objectively not a great outing, even if it was better than when a bunch of teens lit him up the previous start.
And then this is the part that gets more interesting for me, to be honest. So this is what David wrote. He said, when asked what the Blue Jays are looking to see from him and if results are a factor, the right-hander was uncertain. I'm not sure, responded Manoah. I think they're looking for me to be healthy and know that the stuff is there and those results will come. I feel like I threw the ball well today, so just got to continue to build off of that. This strikes me as odd. One, if it's true, and again, I don't think this is not like some gotcha moment per se, but the notion that Manoah is not sure what the Blue Jays want to see from him, again, if that's true, it is problematic, right? Like, when you're going through a process of, we need to build this pitcher back sort of physically, mentally, from just like not just his stuff, but how he attacks and like just everything about Manoah, right? Like, everything, the wheels fell off last year. And so if you have to rebuild everything, you would think that you'd be on the same page with that player about everything that that entails and what they need to see for each step along the road. And so if the Blue Jays have made things vague for him, I think that that's a bit of a failure on their part. On the other hand, I could also sort of understand them being vague because it's tough to make promises that you're unable to keep. And if, for instance, Yariel Rodriguez is effective as an MLB starter and the other guys stay healthy and all those other guys, as I mentioned earlier in this podcast, each and every one of them has a history of being durable. Now, we can talk a little bit about Kevin Gausman later and some of the concerns around him, but there is a world where there's no obvious place to give Alek Manoah a spot in this rotation, even if he, quote unquote, kind of gets back to what his stuff should look like. I guess maybe if he's absolutely dominating like 8 scoreless innings every time in AAA, it's a different story, but it's easy for me to envision a scenario where he's pitching well and sort of would, quote unquote, deserve a spot in the rotation, but there just isn't necessarily one for them. Now, that would be a good scenario for the Blue Jays for sure, but it does seem to be on the table.
I think so. And I mean, from the Blue Jays perspective, this is a guy who didn't report after you optioned him down last year, right? So to give him something like concrete to work towards is, you know, while probably developmentally and in terms of this process, the better thing to do. I can understand how you can't be like, do this, this, and this, check these boxes, and then you're back in the big leagues where you belong. Because, like you said, they may not be able to do that. I think he just has to keep going out and as though he is Bowden Francis, as though he's a guy who is there for when it's needed, and unless he ends up going so well that he forces their hand or some change needs to be made because of underperformance or injury above him. Like, I think that there's not really any other way for him to be other than to be that guy, right? He's how can you tell him, all right, like, give us a couple of good starts and we'll welcome you back. Like, that's not a tenable situation. And factoring in what he went through and what that whole saga last summer, I mean, whatever you can do to try to repeat or to avoid repeating that, seems to be prudent. And you know, the Blue Jays are not always necessarily prudent with how they communicate things or how internal things work. There's a story there somewhere, just sort of buried beyond, you know, layers of, you know, non-disclosure agreements and stuff. But it's going to be tough, and it could become another situation, right? If he feels he's done enough to get that chance again and proved enough by being a, you know, a Cy Young finalist that he deserves it. And they might just have to say no. I don't know. Maybe we got to go to 6-man rotations anyway. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe that's the lesson of the controversy over pitch injuries. This is how these things can be intertwined.
Yeah, it is odd because if I were Manoah, I would feel like, okay, I am a major league pitcher, and that's valid because he's had a lot of success at the major league level. And so he thinks he's a major league pitcher. Why am I in the minor leagues right now? I'm in the minor leagues right now to get myself sorted out because last year there was weirdness and things didn't work out. And I've got to get back to the level. And presumably he has some degree of confidence he can do that. Again, he's always projected a level of confidence, if nothing else. So You believe I'm here to sort myself out. And then I'll be back because I'm a major league pitcher. And of course, like, there's no 5-man rotation in baseball that shouldn't want me based on what I've done and what I can do. And again, this is not me thinking he's delusional, and I'm projecting his thoughts onto him. Again, if I'm him, this is the type of thing I'd be thinking. And so it would probably be frustrating to have that thought process of like, oh, I'm here to sort of fix things, but now I don't know exactly what needs to be fixed and to what degree to get back to where I belong and where I'm supposed to be. And I could very easily envision a scenario where, like you said, we come to a bit of loggerheads once again because the team doesn't necessarily have somewhere to put them, or there could be some discrepancy in their level of confidence he has in that he's back and he's ready to attack MLB hitters, and the Blue Jays have and his stuff, and that's something that's truly ready to happen. And they're also, like, the complication here is the fact that he's kind of dealing with injuries in spring too, so he might be thinking this about him sort of getting healthy and getting ready, and they might be thinking about this in terms of him proving that he can actually do this. It's a murky situation, and the answer often is that we're talking about pitching, people get injured, even durable ones, and so the idea that they won't ever need another starter other than the guys that they have in rotation now, you know, that would be an unusual situation. But it's not stupid to prognosticate on that situation, not only because the guys who are involved are durable, as I said before, but also because this is literally what happened last year, is that they didn't necessarily need more guys. So it's not totally crazy to think that something like that could happen again, even if that's not where the odds would be.
100%. Yeah, it's there's potential for it being difficult. There's potential for it being, you know, a trade request at some point. I mean, we're still a long way from that. You know, you kind of want to see him actually pitch well once before you start thinking about him trying to force his way out of town because they're not bringing him up. But I mean, there's ways for it to sort itself out. And it's just sort of like anybody else. Like I say, like the Shapiro or Atkins will be like, they'll tell us with their performance when they're ready to come up. And I think even though he's had that success, which obviously muddies it, like you say, that's kind of how it has to be.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The one guy that maybe could have something to say about all of this in an unfortunate way would be Kevin Gausman, if there's something wrong with him physically. We saw him one more time since we last spoke against the Colorado Rockies, and the stuff seemed to be there broadly. Like, he was averaging close to 94 on the fastball, which is not sort of the hardest you get from him, but not absolutely crazy in terms of how low it was. You know, he got 11 whiffs on 19 swings on the splitter. It was not, you know, there's no way to defend his outing on Friday against a brutal Colorado Rockies lineup. But it's weird because it's one of those situations where we're really hurt by having such a small sample, because there's a world where, you know, his start against the Rays was good and he was kind of recovering, getting back in the groove. And then the disaster in New York was just kind of weather. And then the start in Colorado was just one of those starts where people are on the fastball and the splitter. And we do see that with Gausman. For an ace level pitcher, he does have, you know, every year seems to have a few starts where the other team just has him figured out. We saw it last season at Houston. He had 8 runs against in 4.2. You know, at Boston, 8 runs against in 3.1. Minnesota, 6 runs against in 4.2. You know, Philly, 7 runs against in 5.1. Like, not every pitcher of his caliber has as many of these kind of blow-up games, I think, as Gausman does, just in part because his pitching style is fairly simplistic. And if someone is able to see him tipping pitches somehow, or just sort of crack that code for a day, they can really have, you know, a very productive game against him. So there's a world where it's just like normal progression followed by shitty weather followed by kind of bad luck. But that's not how it feels at this moment, particularly with him having the injury concerns during the spring. Where are you at with the confidence level in Gausman and him being okay in his, you know, next 3 starts or so?
I'm surprisingly good, though I will say that with the caveat that you may have noticed I tweeted this on either early Saturday or late Friday that I was just up to something else and I completely forgot that the game was on Friday, and then I checked the score before I flipped it on and it was already 6-2. I was like, you know what, I don't think I need this. I don't think I need this in my life right now. I don't think I need the pleasantries of Blue Jays Twitter during a blowout loss to the Rockies. So I didn't watch that game at all. I don't think I've seen a single highlight from it, frankly. I don't know for the Blue Jays that there were any. So take that for what it's worth. But just from being, you know, from not watching the games and only looking at the spreadsheet, I didn't see anything that was all that discouraging other than, you know, all the hard contact and the runs allowed and all that. But yeah, like you say, the swing and miss was really good. I think he had 18 whiffs total, you know, 11, you say, on the splitter. The velocity, not where you want it to be, but also if you look at where his velocity was in like his first 7 starts last year, I think it was equal to or above 5 of his first 7 starts last year. So it's not super uncommon for his velocity to be where it was. And it's, you know, yeah, and it felt like me from looking at like the StatCast data and the box score and all that other stuff, and not watching a single pitch, it felt like, yeah, and you know, and also hearing people and reading tweets about, you know, what was going on, that, yeah, it felt like, okay, that was probably one of those games where a team was just on him and sort of had his number in the way that, like you say, again, can occasionally happen to him. So, the mix of the velocity and the swing and miss, the fact that he just really didn't have a spring, I feel like it's going to all come together soon, if not in the next start, and he'll be fine. That's the vibe I'm at. Maybe that's coping, because yeah, the shoulder thing is obviously a concern, but peripheral wise, I did not feel as bad. It was as bad as it looked, but again, I didn't actually look either.
Yeah, and one aspect of it that was a little bit weird is I think he started throwing the slider a little bit more, and it just, I think partly because the other stuff wasn't working, and yeah, that just doesn't, yeah, things don't generally go well when that happens. Like, sometimes you get the odd analysis that, oh, if Gausman threw the slider more, it'd be good to, you know, change hitters' eye levels and stuff like that. But the reality is that if he's going fastball splitter, that's generally an indication that things are working well, and the slider often comes into play when things are not. Now, I'm broadly with you. The spring and the injury aspect of it, it just adds this wrinkle, right? And the fact that it was the Rockies too. Like if had been the Yankees who had done this to them, and I'm not saying the Yankees are like an unbeatable team. I know their record is fantastic so far. They are very good. But they don't need to be always the shorthand for like, this is the best team. But anyway, but if it were a real baseball team, I think it would be easier to just be like, okay, throw that in the trash. These things do happen to Gausman occasionally. There's just a lot of these weird factors from the Rockies to the truncated spring to the injury concern where there's a level of unease with Gausman that I think is justified. But if I had to fall on one side of it, per se, then I would be with you. I think that it's going to work out okay. And I will say the Blue Jays really need for it to work out okay, because
yes, they do.
Gausman's been their best player in the last couple of years. Like, people don't think of starters this way, but losing Gausman for any period of time is like losing Bichette for months. You know what I mean? Even though he affects only 1 in 5 games, the way he's capable of doing that increases your chances of winning by such a degree. Now, last year, they still had like a 500 record in starts or whatever, but that's just bizarre nonsense / disappointing offense, which I think is a good shorthand for all of the 23 season for the Toronto Blue Jays. We don't have to talk all pitching before we get out here. The one hitter I think we need to check in on a little bit is everybody's new favorite hitter, which Justin Turner, as we record, slashing 362, 466, 574, WRC plus of 203. Offense around the league is down early. Sometimes we see that in April with weather and whatnot. We can kind of track that as it goes. So like that line that I quoted you is impressive, but it's even more impressive in the context of what's going on around the majors right now. He's equal on strikeouts and walks. He's got 7 doubles, which might be up at the top of the leaderboards. I was incredibly skeptical of this signing, I'll say that. And I don't know if this here is enough for me to say definitively that he's going to be great all season long, but it's hard not to be impressed with what Turner's done out of the gate.
100%. Yeah. I was a little less skeptical probably on the signing as you, but it, we've talked about it. It was a weird looking signing, for a number of reasons. And one, I think, you know, when JD Martinez, eventually went to the Mets, that was kind of an indication that maybe they misplayed the market, yet again. But yeah, he's been fantastic so far. He's a guy who, you know, we don't like to talk in clutch and stuff like that, because just, you know, the data doesn't bear out that there really are clutch players, or that they are just very, very few and far between. But he is a guy since 2020, or I think since 2021, his weighted runs created plus is 125, and with runners in scoring position, it's like 152 or something like that. And you could, you know, pick whatever your cutoff you want. It's just he does seem to have a knack for, and in leverage, I think there are good splits there for him as well, where he just has a knack for, you know, rising to those kind of moments, which, you know, the type of things I hate saying, because it's usually more feel than anything else. But, full credit to him. I mean, look at Matt Chapman last year. He coasted a long way on a ridiculous April. So it'll be a long time before we start to hear the howls about Justin Turner if he does go into the tank the way that Chapman did. But I don't think that he is that. He's not that guy. He's been much more consistent throughout his career. He doesn't have, Chapman just hasn't been the same hitter since the hip issue. Obviously, you know, you're not getting the great defense out of Turner, but yeah, it's been a real godsend for this lineup. And where would they be were it not for him at this point? I mean, Dan Vogelbach probably could provide some production, and we haven't really seen much of him. And everybody hates it when he gets in the lineup instead of Turner.
They hate it when he's on the bases more than anything.
I think that's partly true. People hate a lot of things because the team kind of came into the gate flat offensively, and it's we talked about confirmation bias. They are much worse now than their numbers in 2023 are. But people kind of are looking at it and like, see, this is exactly what we expected. Where it's like, no, you should not have expected this. They were underperforming last year, and they're well underperforming in 2 and a bit weeks. And you know, we don't have to get into all that stuff, but it's early, and I don't think anybody needs to think too hard about you know, oh no, Bo's lost or Vlad's not the guy we think he's supposed to be. You know, there's just so much season left and so little that we've seen. And Varsho's OPS went up almost 200 points in two games. So, but all that aside, hopefully, yeah, Turner's been great. It's looked really good. Maybe shouldn't be trying to steal so many bases, he should not try to steal a base. But
he was 13 of his last 14 before he gave that a shot. And then they said Budzinski was the one who told him to do it, which was wild to me. Because I thought, like, the only rationale I could think of was Turner knows Freeland really well from his time with the Dodgers, and so he feels like he has a perfect read on him, and that's why he went. But apparently this was a Bud idea, which everybody loves Bud, but that's an odd idea.
I mean, I didn't hate David Schneider getting to start the next inning, so whatever. They got their run. I mean, Turner's not, you know, he doesn't look like Vogelbach or Alejandro Kirk, but he's just as slow. Vlad could go on that list too, probably. But
Vlad's sprint speed is up this year. I think he was above 50th percentile last time I checked.
Oh my god!
He's moving. Let me confirm that, because that will be.
He's still getting thrown out.
Oh, but, yeah. That's still an issue.
53rd
percentile.
Very nice. Well done, Vladdy. Kudos. Big things coming. Big year incoming. But yeah, I don't know. What can you say? But that Turner's been great so far. And it's nice that he doesn't look washed. It's nice that we're not having the conversation like we were about Brandon Belt around this time last year, where it's like, oh, fuck, are they going to have to, like, do something about this? Like, that's the conversation we'll be having about Kevin Kiermaier next week. But but if we're staying positive, we're in Camp Turner, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to bring Turner down, because his expected numbers are in line with his numbers. You know, the walk to strikeout's really good. There's always a reason to be skeptical about guys who are hitting a lot of doubles. Like, that's a very wavy stat that goes up and down a ton, and a lot of time it's very easy for a double to be a flyout and vice versa. So you would maybe want to see a couple more home runs from him, but yes, you can't really ask for more from him. A little note on Kevin Kiermaier before we get out of here, because we're not going to talk about him at length, but in terms of extreme levels of troubling, Kevin Kiermaier has struck out in 37.8% of his bats, so that's plate appearances, so that's bad. When he puts the ball in play, 70.8% of them have been ground balls. So basically, almost every at bat is resulting in a ground ball or a strikeout, which is 34 of his 45 plate appearances have resulted in a ground ball or a strikeout. Now, some ground balls with him work, but I'm just saying it's... that's grim as far.
It's not great. Hey, but shouts to my boy IKF. Always believed in you, buddy.
You know what they said? The strength of the Blue Jays is that second base platoon area where IKF exactly. And Biggio are working. Before we get out of here, this is where I normally ask people for reviews and ratings and things of that nature, which we always want. That helps grow the podcast and do algorithm things that, as you can imagine, neither of us understand. We did have a review that came in last week that I did want to address, because it was from Joe Elevator, and he said that he was shocked and appalled to find that there is no plant-based or vegan options reviewed in our last episode, and that he waded through all the other ones and felt left out, and he was outraged. But he also gave us 5 stars still. So first of all, Joel Elevator. Anyway, we appreciate you listening and, still giving a positive review. I'd like to offload the blame for that, because all of the information I got was from a press release from the Blue Jays and from an article that was at the Toronto Star. And especially the press release from the Blue Jays did not mention anything plant-based in terms of new options. So they should be publicizing it more, and then we would talk about it. I don't think either of us are like dedicated carnivores that are only interested if blood is gushing from the meat. It was a situation that information was not being put out there. So we apologize. We appreciate the review, and we hope you guys keep sending them. And to wrap up here, we will be back with you again next week at the same time. We have a pretty consistent cadence these days, which is nice. So we will be recording on Tuesday, and hopefully you can hear us at some point on Tuesday afternoon. We look forward to having you tune in then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.